All right, and 3, 2, 1.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the Starving Artist Podcast. We are here today with a very special guest, but before we get that underway, we would love to introduce ourselves as your hosts. My name is Rocky Cotard. I'm one of your local Boston-based artists. I'll turn it over to Katrina.
My name is Katrina. I'm another co-host for this podcast. I'm not an artist per se, but I enjoy talking about art and learning about art. And so I'm looking forward to this conversation today with Vaughn.
All right. All right. This is Professor X, also a co-host of the Starving Artist Podcast. Very nice to have Vaughn with us. And so we're going to ask him some questions, some deep penetrating questions about art and about creativity, about teaching. We're going to get all into it, but I'm just going to kick it back to Rocky and he's going to get us started.
Yeah, so today we are with Vaughn Glitschka, the extraordinaire. Vaughn Glitschka is an illustrator and doing so many different things, quite a few different abilities within his work. Color is certainly something you see immediately when you look at the work that Vaughn has created. He's worked with Microsoft, Nike, Disney, General Motors, and so many different organizations. So we're so happy and grateful to have someone with such a wealth of experience and knowledge. And so please, Vaughn, anything that I might have missed.
Glad to be here. I'm open to talk about anything and everything. So these are my favorite kind of conversations. So whatever you want to discuss, let's go for it.
To get things started, how have you kept yourself and your family positive during, you know, these years, really years now, of the pandemic?
I kind of jokingly told people when COVID kicked in that my day-to-day reality didn't change a whole lot because my studio is based out of my home. So it was, I kind of look at it as I was already self-quarantined for 18 years at that time. Mm-hmm. And all of my clients are remote. So I'm mm-hmm. already working remotely. The dynamic that changed the most for me is the pace of work. Like it really slowed down. And then the clients that I did get, they had too much time to overthink everything. That caused all kinds of problems. Yeah.
Lots of requests for corrections.
Yeah.
Or just they couldn't, it was like paralysis by analysis where they couldn't make a decision. Normally a client would get the directions and they would make a decision pretty quickly. This one, it'd go in front of a committee, which they never told me. That was the first red flag. And then ultimately it was the largest, the original craft brewer in Oregon. They wanted me to rebrand them. And so I drove to Eastern Oregon, met with them, and we started that project. What they didn't tell me is they had an investment board that was going to have to approve everything. I'm not sure I would have taken it on knowing that, but we did. In all, we did about, in two rounds, we did about 20 different directions. They couldn't make up their mind. And ultimately, they hired an interior designer who took clip art and put together a design that they could agree on. And that's what they're using. So,
wow.
I see clip art, and that's a smack in the face.
Yeah, they I still charged them as the amount I quoted because I did all the work. They just couldn't come to a decision. So,
well, you still got paid. That's the most important part.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. But you know, it's so funny because when I was in art school, I think one of the things they told me, it's like never show them the designs that you don't like. Because if you show them that one, very likely they're going to choose that one and you're going to have to work on the one that you don't like. For a long time.
Yeah.
No, you said Oregon, thinking about Beaverton and thinking about Nike. You know, tell us about that experience because like I've always liked Nike since I was a kid. You know, a lot of kids growing up urban city and stuff like that. You know, you love Jumpman, you love Jordan and things of that sort. But how is it working with a big corporation like that?
I've only done a couple projects with Nike. It's like visiting the campus is like going to Starfleet Academy, but for design. I mean, it's really interesting because we're in just a normal cubicle design environment, and you walk like 5 minutes across campus and you can go into this authentic like British pub, but it's all on campus. It's all self-contained within their campus. So it feels like you're in a holosuite. That's why I said Starfleet Academy. But working with them, it's pretty good. I did a design called the King of Diamonds for, I think it was in 2011 when the Cardinals won the World Series. And so they had me do a t-shirt design. So trying to figure out how to quote that was kind of going on their site, seeing how much they charge for a t-shirt, figuring out the audience that would want to buy that shirt if they're Cardinal fans. And I was only about $200 off of what they had in mind for a budget. So that worked out pretty good.
That's awesome.
Good research. That's excellent.
The other time I visited a friend there who works in the event graphics division, he was taking me a tour through the spot, and it was right around when the Olympics were, I think they're in China at that point, and Nike was working on the Chinese Olympic team uniforms. And they had all these mood boards set up on these stands for inspiration. And I was looking at some of their comps, and they had mock-ups of the uniforms, but it was all a tribal looking style. And then I walk around a corner and there's a mood board, and they have all of my tribal artwork printed out up on this mood board. And I'm going, seriously, I like live like 25 minutes down the freeway. You couldn't hire me to do this for you. I would have loved to work on it. I mean, I was like, I was flattered, but a little kind of perturbed too, that they would do that. But I mean, that's pretty normal in terms of mood boards, but they're easy to work for, but they're so big. Their divisions don't, almost like Adobe, they don't communicate one team from another team. So they had me work on another time. They were doing these sports graphic shirts, and they wanted the swoosh really big on a shirt, but then it's made up of a pattern of, in this case, they were first having me do football icons that make up a swoosh on a shirt. And I'm working on this, and I distinctly remember from the last time I worked with them that you couldn't do anything to the swoosh logo. It was like one of their brand standards. And I'm going, well, this whole concept is kind of violating that. And so I kind of brought it up. I go, you sure it's okay to do this? Oh yeah, that's fine. You know, and they approved it. I got it all done, submitted it. And then it went through its normal process of being critiqued. It apparently showed up in front of their in-house legal people, and they go, no, you can't do this. You're violating our brand standards.
Legit.
Well, they come back and they tried to tell me, well, we're not going to do the designs, so can we pay you half? And I go, no.
I did the whole work.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going, I warned you that, are you sure? Because I remember that being a rule. And
thank you. I did that with someone too. And I was like, if I didn't mention this to you, I would feel a little bit bad. But if I mention this to you, it's on your due diligence to go follow up, check with different people, different departments. And some people are better at just like being a promoter, selling themselves. Not in a bad way, but just selling your artwork and what you do. And others, you know, they're more quiet, more mild. And so like a rep would be good because they can speak for them. How do you determine, you know, whether you've just got into the illustration game or you've been doing it for a while? How can you determine, or what's a good metric to be like, maybe I should get a rep, or maybe I should just do it on my own?
I've had a rep since 1998, something like that. 99, I think.
I was two.
I was gonna say, were you born, Rocky?
I was 2 years old. I was 2 years old.
And I've always had the same attitude with the rep. It's their job to find me work, to bring work in, and if they do, they get like 30%. So, but I've always looked at it this way. I don't mind having a rep, but I don't depend on the rep. I still do my own marketing. Mm. I try to land my own clients, and anything I get like that, the rep doesn't get a cut of it. But I think a rep's a great resource to have. And the best way I found to find a rep, I've had three reps over the years, but this one, Scott, is the one I've had the longest. It's just a matter of if you have your own signature style you like working in, whether it's illustration or design, find a rep who doesn't really have that niche covered. And that way it's you're going to be more appealing to them to take on, because it gives them another way to reach out to find more work.
Because Vaughn, I'm actually in the process of looking for a agent right now. And that's actually very interesting that you say, because I'm like, obviously I'm going to look for reps that represent work that's exactly like what I've done. And so that's really interesting to hear.
The best way to get in front of people so they start noticing you is just be consistent with posting on the social media networks, whether it's Twitter, Instagram. And believe it or not, the best engagement I've ever had, LinkedIn, the past 2 years, and I've had a couple that have reached like 80,000, 100,000 people. Mm-hmm. And it's just because on LinkedIn, I'm not connecting. I like that my mom follows me on Facebook, but she's never going to hire me. On LinkedIn, I can connect to art directors, creative directors. They follow me back. Then they're going to engage with what I post. And so my work is always getting in front of people who can actually hire me to do something. And every now and then you hit on something.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think definitely for my generation, not a lot of people engage with LinkedIn that way. Yeah. Like they just kind of go, we're going to post it on Instagram and let go. But LinkedIn is literally a professional networking site. So I just find it very interesting, because I honestly, even me myself, I've never really thought to do it on LinkedIn. So such a good point. Wow.
Speaking of, we were kind of touching on LinkedIn. And I know you've kind of talked about this on different podcasts and different interviews. How you started working with LinkedIn. How does one, thinking of myself, but how do you get onto the platform to, talk about what you love? I mean, I love how you talk about vectors. You talked about the I think it's called LiveScribe. It was a plugin.
Vectorscribe,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Vectorscribe. And so, I'm picking on Rocky here because he doesn't really like the anchors on
Illustrator. Oh, I'm terrible with
Illustrator. I'm telling him that pen tool is one of the most powerful tools in Illustrator. But so when you got the pitch from LinkedIn, kind of tell us, walk us through that. How'd that go?
I believe it was a year prior, I had written my first edition of my book, Vector Basic Training. Mm-hmm. And then the publisher was I'd never worked with the publisher before, as Pearson or New Writer. And man, it was a major hassle. I almost quit after 3 months because they wanted to do these phone meetings every single day. And I no, this isn't going to happen. And I just said, look, unless we absolutely have to have a phone call, can we just not do that?
Every day.
Yeah, it was getting out of control. And they finally said, okay. And they kind of, because at that point, I had done three other books with How Design, and they signed the contract, and then they wouldn't talk to you until it's a week out from when it's due. They're like all hands off, and that's what I was used to. And this other publisher was just every day getting emails and wanting to set up meetings, and I'm going, just let me do the book, And finally I got the book done. It came out. People were liking it, And then it was like immediately they wanted me to sign to do another book, and the contract was sitting on my desk and I just didn't want to sign it because I didn't enjoy the process. And I get a call from a friend of mine named Morty, who he had written books for Illustrator, and I'd done a few of the covers of his books. And he said, hey, I'm working at the time it was lynda.com. And what would you think of doing content for us? And I go, well, it sounds funner than a book. And so I did it. I decided to do that. I'd never done it before, but the format is what appealed to me. But I was a little intimidated. I'd never really done it. And then one of the guys that works there, Fritz is his name. I was asking him about that, and I'm going and telling him that I don't know everything about Illustrator. It's like, I don't feel kind of qualified to do this. And he goes, well, that's not really what you're being hired to do. You're being hired to kind of share how you go about doing it. And he said, that's what you need to focus on, is focus on how you approach things. This isn't about doing a video on how to use Illustrator per se, even though I do that. And that kind of freed me up. And so I'm now at the point where that was 2011, and starting with last year and continuing this year, I'm going back to my original courses and I'm basically throwing them out and just completely reworking them, because since 2011, I kind of figured out how best to communicate within that framework and what not to do. I just happened to know Morty, who had gotten hired by Lynda, the lady who started lynda.com. And so I started in 2011, and then about a year and 2 months later, they had venture capitalists come in and invest like $20 million into Lynda. And then it was a little over a year after that that they turned around and sold lynda.com to LinkedIn for, I believe it was 1.5 or 2 billion, something like that.
Wow.
And Lynda, and so then it became LinkedIn. And then shortly after that, they told all of us that eventually it's going to be just, we're going to rebrand it LinkedIn Learning. So Lynda's, the brand is going away. That just completed its transition last week. They finally killed off lynda.com. And then it was, I forget how long after that, Microsoft came into LinkedIn and bought them for like $5 billion. People, that said, getting back to your original question, you can approach them and pitch them on something. And I've tried recommending certain people to them, because I remember I was looking for somebody, some content on their site myself, just to learn more about brush technology and Photoshop and really understanding what all those little nuanced settings do and what they mean. And they didn't have anything like that. And I told them, you should hire Kyle Webster to do it for you, because he was all into Photoshop brushes. And then basically wouldn't give me a time of day, and they didn't. And then Adobe came along and hired Kyle to kind of do all that for him. So it's unfortunate. I think systems like Skillshare are the best ones for people to approach, because I could see any of you kind of doing that, figuring out what you want to, do theme wise and kind of figuring out your own production. I'm not familiar with how they do their production.
I'm not sure either. I do have a friend. She likes Skillshare a lot. But it's, I think it's still fairly new, but I don't think it's as good as LinkedIn Learning, but that's just me.
Yeah. Well, like Skillshare, Creative Live, I forget the other ones out there. They've all kind of tried to poach me to do stuff for them, and I've never done it. Not because I have a non-disclosure or anything, I don't, but it's just been I don't want to do production. I don't want to edit my own video. I don't do that. I record it. I make notes, audio notes as I'm doing it if I screw up, so they can edit it and make it look better than what I did. Yeah. And LinkedIn has their own production department that does all that. Last year, because of COVID, they had to ship me their studio in a box, basically. Mm-hmm. And we set up live action set out in my living room.
It was like a green screen?
It wasn't a green screen. We just framed out an area of the room and we did prop settings and I bought a table. And just because that course really needed some live action where I'm talking about drawing and doing things. Okay. So we had to do it that way. But all of the directors and people who usually do the sound, they're all remote, wired into it. It was really, and they controlled the camera remotely from California as I was doing the video. So it worked out. It was
just a little different. They remote control the
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's intense.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
The Starving Artist Podcast is a band of super talented, sophisticated rock stars. We aim to challenge ourselves and the status quo. Now, the Starving Artist Podcast Network is expanding nationally from New York City to Portland, Oregon, and broadcasting on local TV courtesy of Urban Media Art Studio right here in Malden, Massachusetts. Please support the movement by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Starving Artist Podcast, and follow us on Instagram at starving_artist_podcast. You can also find us on Patreon and listen to our podcast on Anchor, Apple, Google, SoundCloud, and Spotify. Rocky, Xavier, and I want to sincerely thank all who have been loyal ambassadors of the Starving Artist Podcast Network. But we ain't done, y'all. Stay tuned and check out the latest and greatest. This is your girl, Katrina, and I'm out of here.
All right, so we're back. And we have a truncated segment. And that's a segment with Katrina, and she's going to take us through that.
So, Vaughn, we just wanted to ask you just a non-art related question. We see that you've lived in Seattle, you're in Oregon, you've been to California. Just wanted to know, what was your favorite city to live in? I'm sure you may have lived other places as well, but what was your favorite city to live in and why?
I'd say Seattle. Yeah. There's so much stuff to do up there. You know, the least favorite city to live in is the one I'm living in right now.
So. Salem?
Yeah, granted, I have been to Salem. And I went to like an artist alley in Salem, but granted, I might have been in Lynn.
You talk about Salem, Mass?
Yeah, Salem, Massachusetts.
Salem. Oregon.
He's in Salem, Oregon.
What am I saying? I have never been to Salem, Mass.
A lot better.
But to wrap up, I actually had one last question, and then if our other hosts had questions as well, like if you know, just in terms of the wealth of experience that you have, just to bring it closer to our audience potentially, like what like feedback would you give to somebody starting in the arts field? Any keys to success?
Are you talking design or illustration?
Let's say illustration first and then design. I'm an illustrator.
Well, with illustration, like when I went to school, it was kind of before they would create a separate department that was focused on illustration. So they expected everybody going through Communication Arts was the name of the program to take illustration courses, to take live drawing courses. And it was all about whether or not you ever want to become an illustrator. Drawing was going to help you to solve visual problems, whether it was illustration, whether it was design. And so I'm a big pusher of drawing, especially in context for designers, because there's a lot of designers out there that try to limit everything they create to geometric shapes, circles and stuff. And, you know, the Starbucks logo wasn't created that way. Mm-hmm. Somebody had to illustrate that. So I think if you learn how to draw, you're able to expand your horizon in terms of what you can do design-wise. Mm-hmm. When it comes to illustration, I teach in a Master of Fine Arts program at Hartford College in Connecticut each summer. except last summer, of course. And I've learned as much as the students have over the last three or four years. It's just so fun watching, understanding the history and apprenticeship that is part of the illustration legacy in terms of being a profession. And I think the old mentality of like Norman Rockwell, where he was one style, I don't think that necessarily is the absolute anymore. I think illustrators can explore a bunch of different styles that they like. They can make each of them their own in mm-hmm. the terms of how they approach it. You know, I was looking at your Instagram feed, mm-hmm. Rocky, and I love the fact that you're able to do kind of your portrait illustration, mm-hmm. Your painting that's showing on your wall, but you also have this really cool kind of more organic collage almost looking style too. And I think mm-hmm. that's awesome. I think kind of exploring and playing around with things is the best way to discover what you like to do best. And you never, that's the other thing. You never know where one thing's going to lead. So don't just turn it down because it might be a little uncomfortable since you've never done it. That's some of the best way to discover a new way to work, in my mm-hmm. opinion. So
awesome. That's really good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, especially when you think of exploration, we was going to talk to you about like doing different styles. Because you have a lot of different styles, you have a lot of different substrates, things that you've drawn on, you know, from cars. We've seen some stuff that you did on cars and mm-hmm. Canvas, walls, paper, you know, all different types of substrates. So as a designer, those are who are in the design field, and design is kind of broad now because, you know, you have the UX, you have experience yeah. design. I mean, there's so many layers to design, you know, everything ties together with drawing, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I think drawing is a foundation that has to be established. And Rocky and I both started drawing when we were very young. Fortunately, we were able to cultivate that. And now it's just, you know, getting clients in the door.
I think especially as an artist these days, if you're experimenting with a lot of different things, I find that the concept is you have to do one thing and that's what will lead to success. And I've always been against that. I'm like, I want to do this and that and this and that and this and that. And so to hear that that's kind of the case and to be able to kind of hear it from somebody who's very, you know, doing very well in the field of illustration as well as design, I think that's something I myself can certainly put to use. And I'm sure our listeners can as well. So thank you, Vaughn.
Thank you so much.
We do have a closing program. I don't know, Katrina, I don't know if you had anything you wanted to say before you get that rolling.
No, I was going to say thank you again for coming. We definitely appreciated the conversation, learned a lot from you today, and you seem to have a really good handle on, you know, your numbers and, you know, your workflow. That's really a good thing for people who are just starting out to really have a good handle on that going forward, because you never know, as you mentioned, you had experiences with clients that just kind of left you hanging, but you already had your ducks in a row. So you weren't left, you know, without any compensation. So that's a good reminder for people who are just starting out to get those things kind of under their belt early so that they don't have issues down the road.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So Vaughn, how can our viewers connect with you?
Probably the easiest way is you could follow me on Instagram. It's just vglitchka. If you go to my website, Glitchka Studios, if you can't remember that, just go to vonster.com and it'll take you there. That's an easier way.
Vonster.com. I'll have to check that site out.
The Behance page is pretty good too. That's a shout out for everyone. Go on Behance as well.
This is Rocky signing off.
This is Katrina signing off.
This is Vaughn signing off.
This is Professor X signing off. The Starving Artist Podcast.
The Starving Artist Podcast.
The Starving Artist Podcast.
The Starving Artist Podcast.